Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? Who's there? What's going on?
It's time to enter the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's time for the highly sought-after, fabulous final hour of the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
And welcome back with a highly sought after fabulous final hour of the week here in the Tom Abraham Show. What did you say, T-Mac? I think you just said something in my ear. What did you say? Oh, you wanted to hear it? That what you said? I heard you. It's like I played an old-school Monday Night Football song for our 5 o'clock listeners. That's what you said. I heard you. Maybe it was Cream that said it. He said, Cream said, I want to hear what an organ is. What's an organ? Cream, you got your skinny ass up out of the chair there dancing? Hips going? About you, T-Mac, dancing around the studio. I can just see T-Mac just taking it, throwing his headphones up in the air, and just playing the air guitar right now, like Jimi Hendrix. Oh, if we just had video.
It's the medicine right there.
Come on, it's catchy, isn't it? You got your shoulders going?
Shoulders, head, you know.
It's not a game show. It's not The Price is Right from 1974.
Bob Barker would fall over dead trying to dance to this.
That was the original Monday Night Football music. And when that sucker fired up, and I was 9 years old, baby. Especially this. Now everybody's in it. Now organ, guitar. Boy, these guys are out of control. They're shredding. That's what they're doing. They're shredding. How good is that? You might as well hear the last 10 seconds. How sweet is that, man? Come on, that's an eargasm, right? I mean, that's a flat-out eargasm. Don't you feel like you need a cigarette now? I mean, it's just that's an eargasm.
Who said, whoever said cocaine and LSD was useless, then you're probably...
I mean, just saying, man. I mean, that's just sweet.
You sound like you're sweating.
I am. I'm like totally wore out. I mean, that's the greatest piece of sports music ever recorded. I mean, in the history of ever. I mean, ever. I mean, you know, you got that sappy Masters, you know, that thing. Get that out of here. Not that, you know.
Where would you rank? Where would you rank Monday Night Football by Hank and the gang?
That's in the top. That's up there.
It's got to be up there.
It's up there. It's not bad. It's in the top five, probably. But that's pretty strong. You know? Yeah. I mean, you know, that's good, right?
That's good. I'm just saying it's a Monday night party, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a Monday night party. It's pretty good. I should get Hank back on. Now that he's back, I should get him back on there. you know, some people, I know you, you know, you like to bounce the ball around.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You like that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
You know who wrote that, don't you?
If he said you, I'm not going to believe you.
No, it's not me. I didn't write that.
I don't know.
John Tesh. It's John Tesh. And that is the theme song to John Tesh's radio show. You don't even know who John Tesh is. But that John Tesh wrote that. And then he uses that as his theme song. Everybody's like, why are you using the NBA theme song for your show? It's like, well, I wrote that. And it became that. Oh, doesn't that take you back to June? The NHL theme song. I mean, come on, man.
Is there any, other than maybe the Masters, is there any sports music that you don't like? Now, I don't mean like, you know, school fight songs or anything.
Yeah, there's some things I really don't like. I mean, there's like, you know.
Meet the Mets, step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife.
You know.
That sounds like a sitcom.
That's the Mets song, man. I mean, I'm a
Yankees. Let's get behind the children. Yankees, they're gonna learn.
I mean, that's my song.
It doesn't sound as television-y as sitcom-y as the other one did. The other one sounded like I'm about to watch John Ritter and a couple girls dance around for 30 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. There it is. Yeah, Hank's a big Alabama fan from Montgomery, Alabama. yeah, I mean, they're, you know, I mean, that's...
It's like a situation my friends and I were talking about the other day. We were in our group chat. There's about five or six of us in a group chat, mm-hmm. and it really starts to heat up during football season. And someone posted on Twitter, what are your favorite five, you know, sports memories ever. It can include, you know, just nostalgia or this or that, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Well, then we started talking about, we took it into our own and we were naming our five. Some of them were easy, some of them weren't. But then we started naming our top five most painful sports memories. And no. I had way more painful sports
memories. Way too many of those. Yeah.
Than I did, you know, favorites. It's kind of like the music thing. There's so many, we can sit there and rank the top, the best.
Well, do you take your own
music, but.
Yeah, you got to take your own things out of it. Like my, you know, your own experience, like sports memories, like playing or sports. Like I have sports memories from playing hockey in college. I got sports memories from playing high school football. I got sports memories from playing baseball. You know, not that stuff.
I would have to put it into categories.
Yeah. As a fan, see, that's the thing. I mean, one of my favorite sports memories was when my son was 11 years old and he hit a ball over a scoreboard 250 feet away for a walk-off home run to win the state championship in Tennessee. Yeah, I mean, so that's a, you know, but then I got another son that ran for, you know, 180 yards and four touchdowns in a game. You know, so that's a sports memory, but it was, you know, it was a freshman game, but it was still a game. Oh no, it was in the 8th grade. It was an 8th grade game. You know, but that was a sports but if you take those away, My greatest sports memory would probably be the 1978 World Series with my dad.
Yeah, but that was cool.
In Yankee Stadium. That's probably my number one sports memory, is being at the 1978 World Series with my father. Yeah. My number two greatest sports memory would be being at Old Cleveland Municipal Stadium, Browns against the Packers in 1970 with my dad. My dad taking me to that. I think that's where that would go in.
Yeah, see, I had a favorite and a painful memory that included me going to a game. The painful one was the only game I've ever been to in Norman, Oklahoma with my stepdad. It was supposed to be great, but they lost to Kansas State in 2012, so that stung. And we've never really gotten over that. And then one of my favorites would be when I was at the Sugar Bowl with one of my best friends who was an Alabama fan, sitting right next to him as Oklahoma beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. That was pretty awesome.
Whoa, you were at that Sugar Bowl?
I was at that Sugar Bowl.
Wow,
broke the
good
bank
job
to
by
go.
You.
It was awesome. Drove all the way down there. It was a good time. It was perfect. We got down there we weren't there for New Year's Eve, but we were there New Year's Day. It was awesome. It's a big old party down there. So that was cool.
Another great one would be I was at the Browns Oilers game in about 19. Cream it, have to look it up. It was the Browns and the Oilers last game of the regular season. Then they played the next week. They played in the playoffs. It was Marty Schottenheimer's last year, I believe. It might have been 88 or 89 or 90, somewhere in there. And it was Don Strock played quarterback for the Browns because Bernie Kosar was hurt. And the Browns, it was in the snow, and the Browns won the game. And I was there with a bunch of buddies of mine. So that would be high on the list as well. Most painful.
I got one that you'll remember too. It's on my painful memories. It'll be on. It might not be one of your favorite memories, but you'll remember it as a good one.
What's
for you.
Be your most painful sports memory to be at?
To be at? I haven't been to very many.
Well,
games.
What would be your most painful sports memory then?
Okay, this is one of them. It has to do with it. It was the only. It's the only team me and my stepdad don't see eye to eye on. I usually get all of my sports opinions as far as teams go when I was younger. I would pull for teams because my stepdad liked them, and I grew up in that atmosphere. But I never got that way with the Yankees. I couldn't stand the Yankees. And he likes the Yankees. He's not a Yankees fan, but he likes them. He was pulling for the Yankees against the Braves in the 99 World Series. And I can't remember what game it was, but I want to say I want to see the
home run.
I want to see the Braves. Say the Braves were up like 6-0 or something like that. They were up a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy. The Yankees are leading the series, but I'm happy. I'm bragging. I'm 8 years old, I'm almost 8 years old, telling him, yeah, the Braves are going to get one, the Braves are going to win. The Yankees came back and won that freaking game. And it hurt. It stung because it's my stepdad, you know what I mean? Like, him of all people, it gets to me the
most. Was he ridiculing you? I mean, he wasn't ridiculing you, he wasn't ripping on you.
He was ripping on me a little, but in a fun way, but it just hurt
because... You're 10, you know?
Yeah, well, it hurt just because it's the only team we didn't see eye to eye on, and I thought that my team was better than his. And
I don't know if that was... I don't know if it was 6-0... Is that the year the Yankees? Is that the year the Braves went to Yankee Stadium and won the first two games, and then the Yankees swept them?
No, I think the Yankees swept the Braves in '99 altogether.
No, they didn't. I don't think so. I think your memory is off a little bit. There was one year
I was 8, so
yeah. There was the Yankees had lost. The Braves went to New York and won the first two games in the World Series.
Didn't they play the Yankees in '96 too?
In 96, that's the Jim Leritz one. Yeah, maybe they did sweep him in 99. The Braves went to New York, won the first two games. It went back to, it would have been 96. They went back to Atlanta. That was when Jim Leritz hit the home run to beat him in game 4, and then he went back to New York and the Yankees won the series. They ended up sweeping them from down, they were down 2-0 going to Atlanta and came back and beat them 4-0. You know, it's tough. You know, it's weird. Two things. I'm going to give you an example here. These are two things that were kind of painful deal. One would be last year. I was standing on the 5-yard line last year when Clemson ran the pick play, you know, and scored with 1 second left to win the national championship. Okay? Painful. Kick six. I was in the stadium for kick six. That was pretty bad. I think that's probably the most painful.
That's got to be pretty awful.
That's pretty bad. But here's the thing. I was also in the stadium for game when they sacked Brody Croyle 11 times and they mugged Alabama. It was the score ended up not being that bad. It was like 26 to whatever, 11 to 12, 19, something like that. The score wasn't terrible, but I always felt like Tommy Tuberville called off the dogs. I thought they could have crushed Alabama in that game, and it ended up Alabama hung in there a little bit. And the score looked less – and Mike Shula made a terrible, terrible decision to take the ball. They won the toss, and he said, we're going to take the ball. And Auburn said, okay, you're going to take the ball in the student section. and they kicked off towards the student section, and Alabama took over with their backs to the Auburn students and never recovered. You know, he should have deferred, you know, right then and there. But see, that was in the midst of Auburn beating a snot out of Alabama every year. You know, so that was in the midst of that run.
Yeah.
So that was frustrating. Kick six. Kick six was a head shaker. Yeah, I mean, it was kick six. I mean, that was absolutely. But the Tide had won a national championship, and they'd won a couple of national championships. They'd won three national championships, I think. But, you know, so it was like last year. It was last year was a head shaker, but it was like, it's like the Yankees. When the Yankees won four World Series in 6 years and then didn't, it was like, you know, you know, right. When they got beat by the Marlins, there was a certain satisfaction. And that's how I felt last year. And last year I was like, well, you know, he can't win them all. He can't win the national championship every single year.
Right.
You know, the Tide had won four of these, and, you know, and Clemson got them there. You know, they're good too. They got scholarships, you know. So it was weird. But when that game, when they sacked Brody Croyle 11 times, I may have just made that number up. Cream, do you remember what it was? It was awful. It was 2004, 5, 6, somewhere in there. And it was my first Iron Bowl.
Oh, wow.
You know, my first Iron Bowl that I was at.
And
I've been at 7 or 8 of them now.
I did look up that that World Series in 99. The Yankees did sweep the Braves. It was game three that I was talking about. The Braves were up 5-1.
5-1.
After four, and the Yankees came back and won 6-5. Rough. But speaking of the kick six, my most painful sports memory I remember watching was the Boise State Fiesta Bowl when they beat Oklahoma. That killed
the Statue of Liberty, stupid Statue of Liberty play.
The hook and ladder. The hook and ladder was what hurt the most, because a lot of people remember that game from that moment, the hook and lateral forces overtime. A lot of people don't remember that Boise State was kicking the crap out of Oklahoma. Oklahoma clawed back to tie that game, and then with, I think, just over a minute left, Jared Zabransky throws a pick six. Boise State's quarterback throws a pick six. That's ball game. It's 35-28. Oklahoma's
won. Yeah, but you were like Alabama against Oklahoma. You didn't want to be there. I mean, you guys, it was the same thing. You didn't want to be there.
Well,
you didn't want to be there.
Had they not gotten hosed out of the Oregon game that year, they might have been in the national championship or in maybe a closer game than that. They had two losses in the Fiesta Bowl. One of them, they got hosed by Oregon on on the onside kick that they did recover, and Oregon touched before it went 10 yards. So, you know, but
Rick in North Fort Myers says that that's cheesy porn music that I play. I'm not feeling cheesy porn music there. He says it's more like an earworm than ear, eargasm. Nobody has better music than WWE Raw and SmackDown. Best baseball song ever is Go Cubs Go.
Go Cubs Go! Go Cubs Go!
That's annoying. Favorite sports memory, Cubs win the World Series. Worst sports memory, Bartman. Nah. You're going to lose that game anyway. Kenny Hill, best sports memory, Bo over the top. Cam back, kick six, Cubs win the series. Well, which one? Bow over the top, cam back, or kick six?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's Wardam Kenny, maybe?
That's Wardam Kenny.
Maybe.
Maybe. Let me get Grumpy in here. Grumpy, welcome in. How are you, man? Grumpy. Was it Grumpy saying it was Grumpy? You got to push the button, Cream.
This time it's pushed. I don't know where Grumpy's at.
Where'd you go, Grumpy? 11 sacks. Is that what I said, 11 sacks?
Yeah.
What year was it?
Hold on. 2005. 05?
05. Big House hits the text window. No way Undertaker is 60. I met him 10 years ago. He was 60 then.
That's a good job there. That's funny.
Wait, Undertaker, I'm just reading it. Don't hold it against me.
Well, if you're going off what Hollywood said, then you can't believe he's 60. But if Undertaker says he's 60, I believe him. If Hollywood says he's 60, there's no telling.
Rex from Athens says the Houston Oilers song. Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers all the way. That's the Houston Oilers song.
Speaking
of, the Titans need a song, he said. Well, the Titans don't need a song. They got an entire music city that makes music. I had a couple of Titans songs in here somewhere.
That season was also another good, bad sports memory. You know, the Music City Miracle and then coming 1 yard short was rough.
The Houston Oilers song and the Miami Dolphins song is the same song. Well, that's true.
What?
Pull that up. Pull that up. You'll hear Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins all the way. It's the same friggin' song. The Houston Oilers and the Miami Dolphins got the same song. God, I wish I had some of my Titans songs. I got Titans songs.
You have a Saban board. You need a board with NFL music. All the team songs.
Yeah. That would be good for you to use on you know, Football Friday.
Yeah.
Grumpy Belled. Chris said, I went in the gas station as the song started. I was kind of sad. Came out, and you were still telling me what the instruments were playing. Made my day, Chris and Madison. Thank you, Chris. I think it's just a wonderful piece of music. Grumpy, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, not much. Are you doing a Friday trifecta?
We are. We're doing the Big Ten Future Fecta. Do you want to make the picks?
Yeah, real quick.
All right, Ohio State over or under 10.5 wins. This is the 12 games in the regular season. 10.5.
Under.
Wisconsin, 10.5.
Under.
Penn State, 9.5.
Under.
Damn. And Michigan, 8.5.
I'll go over. I think they win 9.
They could win 9. They got.
And you know, I didn't even have a dog in the fight, but you knew that Alabama was going to block that field goal against Tennessee about, what, maybe 8 or 9 years ago when Tennessee had a chance to beat them, and that real big center, defensive nose guard for Alabama just pushed the whole line back and blocked it, and you knew it was coming.
Terrence Cody. Mount Cody, they called him. They call that in Alabama lore, that play is called the Rocky Block. And that was Lane Kiffin's one and only year. So that must have been, what, 2007 or 08, something like that. That was Lane Kiffin's only year, and Alabama wins 12-10, I think, was the final score in that deal.
And as an Auburn fan, we were sitting there, we knew it was going to happen, and you were like, surely they won't let him, you know, come through like that. But they didn't have a choice. That man was going to come through there either way. All right, I appreciate it, man.
I mean, I appreciate you. Mount Cody. I think they blocked 2 kicks in that game.
I think Cody blocked them both.
Yeah, I think Cody blocked 2 kicks in that game.
That was a good call. I think Vern called that. He said, blocked again, Cody again, you know?
Yeah. And then Tennessee fan wanted there to be a penalty on that second block, the one that wins the game, because Cody rips his helmet off before he goes off the field. Cody ripped his helmet off at about the numbers or the hash, and he runs around on the field with his helmet off going towards the sideline, and that's supposed to be an automatic penalty. But I know Tennessee fans were beside themselves on that deal.
But wouldn't that have been afterwards? That would have already been Bama's ball, wouldn't it?
I don't even know. I'll tell you what, with the Browns, it didn't happen that way. Years ago, Dwayne Rudd, Cleveland blocked a kick. The guy took his helmet off on the field, and they lined up and kicked again and beat him. The Browns had blocked the kick to win the game, and Dwayne Rudd took his helmet off, the linebacker, and they penalized Cleveland 5 yards, lined up, kicked the winning field goal.
Wow. And that Alabama-Tennessee game was 09, by the way.
09. Is that that was the magic year for Lane Kiffin there?
Yeah.
Yeah. The best line ever in one of those games was back when Alabama beat Tennessee at Tennessee. When the kicker missed the kick, it was 66, 67, 68. Look it up, Cream. It was like 66, 67, somewhere in there. Anyway, Alabama won like 11-9, and Tennessee had a kick to win the game, and the kicker for Tennessee missed the kick. And afterwards, they asked Bear Bryant, they said to him, do you feel fortunate that the kid missed the kick to beat you there, because Bear never lost to Tennessee. So he said, do you feel fortunate? And Bear said in that slow draw, he said, it doesn't matter. If he'd have kicked it straight, we had it blocked. That was classic. Let's get a break. If he kicked it straight, we had it blocked. That's Bear. All right, when we return, we'll rewind it. Right here on 730, 1039 AM.
Now back to the big dog. Bark, bark.
Welcome back on a Football Friday. Just heard the Friday Future Fact. If you want to get in on that, text it to me. All our guests today appeared on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline, and that included former Titans president, NFL executive of the year, Jeff Diamond, who was in earlier, Justin Ferguson from SEC Country covering Auburn, Steve Merrill was in, a handicapper from Pro Sports Info, and Cecil Hurt from the Tuscaloosa News. We put it all in the hopper, and we give it back to you as the Woody Anderson Ford Rapid Rewind. Yes, you always do say that. I had nothing to do. You had nothing to do with the Herschel Walker trade. There's no question about it. But, you know, Jerry has been a lousy GM. He's won three Super Bowls. But you got to say, you know, for all the feathers that he ruffled early on, he, and it used to be called a Maverick owner and all of those things, it's really been a pretty solid owner, right? I mean, would you say, I mean, he's been a really pretty good owner for the for the Dallas Cowboys and for the NFL?
Oh, definitely. He was definitely an innovative owner, kind of, as you said, a maverick, perhaps, especially on the marketing front, but very innovative and very creative in his sponsorship deals, and took a lot of risk with the new stadium, Cowboys Stadium, now AT&T Stadium down in Dallas, obviously. And so you've got to say he's been – really one of the very model owners in terms of the new era of ownership in the NFL. And yeah, I think obviously they've had their ups and downs on the field, but things are going well right now. And sometimes you get lucky. And I think maybe they got a little lucky last year with Dak Prescott in the fourth round, but it worked out. Ezekiel Elliott, the fourth pick overall, that wasn't necessarily lucky. They identified him early, but Jerry, I like Jerry personally. He's always been nice to me over the years, and Stephen Jones, his son, is a good friend. In fact, I was out at Cowboys camp last week out in Oxnard with a fitness company I do some work with, and really enjoyed spending time at that camp, seeing their people, and it's a first-class operation.
You know, Stephen does seem pretty sharp. I used to just think of him as, you know, he was just tagging along behind Jerry, but you know, he's his own man, and I kind of get the sense now more than ever that he's really running the show now out there. I think Jerry has really backed off. In fact, I was a little bit concerned seeing Jerry last night on the game with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. His voice sounded thin, and he seemed a bit frail. So I would think that he's kind of pulled back quite a bit at this point in time, but Steven seems to be like he's really got his finger on the pulse of things.
Yeah, Steven is definitely the head of player personnel, but I don't know that Jerry has stepped back. I think he's still very involved, but I think he trusts Steven on the player personnel front, and he's got his other son, Jerry Jr., on the stadium front and marketing front. His daughter, I think Charlotte, is involved, and so it's really a family operation, and you got to give them credit as far as, I think in the most recent Forbes survey, they were the number one most valued sports franchise in the world, and that includes entities such as Manchester United. So I think they've obviously done a lot right, and I think he, as I said, has been ultimately a great owner for the NFL. It may not have looked that way initially, but it's turned out that way, and he certainly built the Cowboys into such a valuable franchise. They always were, but he certainly has sustained it.
Yeah, I think, and I know it's a dirty word to say now, but I think that Jerry Jones has been to the business side of the NFL what Art Modell was to the TV side of the NFL. People don't know that Art Modell, before he became vilified for moving the Browns out of Cleveland, Art Modell was a shaker and mover in the early 60s and all through the 60s and 70s. He was the guy that had the idea for Monday Night Football. He said, I'll put my team on there on the first game. If it's a flop, it's a flop, and all that kind of stuff. And he came up with a lot of great ideas. And probably should be in the Hall of Fame. It's just this whole thing he did with Cleveland and Baltimore is going to be a sticking point there. But Jerry is that guy for the business side. These were family businesses and so on, and they, you know, their growth steadily went up. But under Jerry Jones, he bought that team for what was a record $170 million or $175 million at the time, and now his team's worth over $4 billion. That's a heck of an investment.
Yeah, no kidding. That worked out pretty good for Jerry and for the family. I think they've got to be pretty happy with that investment. And at the time, yeah, people wondering, whoa, $170 million. Well, not necessarily turning out to be a bad deal for the Cowboys and for Jerry's heirs. They're going to do just fine with that team. But I'll tell you what, he is not just the turnaround type owner who wants to build value and then get out. And as I've seen a lot of owners over the years, including my friend Red McCombs in Minnesota that did that, and this is a guy that is committed to his franchise and to the city of Dallas and the Dallas market. So I think he's a Hall of Famer, and I think it's deserved as a contributor.
Justin Ferguson with us on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline from SEC Country, talking some Auburn here. What did you think about the number 13 ranking? I mean, Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated and SI.com says that he thinks that Auburn is the team that there's the most blind faith in, that, not knowing really what Stidham is going to do and what the offense will look like under Chip Lindsey and some of the other aspects of it, that it's kind of it's like a stock, you know what I mean? You're buying the future on Auburn. Did you think that that's a fair number, 13th ranked team in the country going in?
I think it's a fair number. It's a little lower than I probably would have put them, and I think it's a little lower than what you're probably going to see when the AP poll comes out in a few weeks. I think Auburn has the potential to be a top 10 team this season. I think Alabama is clearly the number one team in the SEC for a reason, the number one team in college football. But I think Auburn has the best shot of any team outside of Alabama to win the SEC. I would take Auburn above LSU, who was just right ahead of them at number 12. So, heading into this year, I would see anywhere between 9 and probably down to 13 was probably towards the low end of what I would expect for Auburn. But, I do understand what guys like Andy Staples are saying. Auburn's got to prove it. The last few seasons, they've had good hype, and they've kind of fallen apart, especially down the stretch. Have they made enough changes with Stidham, with Jared, with Chip Lindsey, kind of reverse that trend? I understand the cautiousness surrounding Auburn, but yeah. I do think with what they've got coming back on defense this year, in that system under Kevin Steele, and just the offensive line and the weapons they have at running back and wide receiver, that if Jarrett Stidham, he doesn't have to go be a Heisman Trophy candidate, but if Jarrett Stidham comes in and delivers, this is a team that can definitely win 9, 10, 11 games this year and be better than what Auburn put out on the field last year.
Well, they can be, 7-0 by the time they go to Baton Rouge if they can get through week two at Clemson. It looks like they'll probably be about the same underdog at Clemson as they were at home against Clemson, and that game came down to the last play last year against the Clemson team that had Deshaun Watson, but kind of stumbled around early in the season. But, man, that seems to be the one that, it's not going to learn anything. You're not going to learn much. Although I don't like playing Georgia Southern. I think that's a pain in the neck, playing that kind of a true wishbone, triple option type offense. But, Georgia Southern and Mercer, either side of the Clemson game. But that game at Clemson, going to learn an awful lot. And Clemson's number 5 going in. They're going to be a touchdown favorite there. So I think that's the one that's going to kind of set the bar early in the first half of the season, really, for Auburn.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is last year, no one expected Auburn to put up, that kind of defensive effort that they did against Clemson last year. And I think with what they showed last year, they've got to figure out how they're going to get some pass rush without Carl Lawson and without Montrevious Adams. But you look, all their linebackers are back. They've gotten even deeper at linebacker. In the secondary, they are very deep at deep at cornerback. They have three seniors coming back at safety. They're moving some pieces around back there, but they have what it takes to put up that kind of defensive performance again against an elite team like Clemson. And then you look at Clemson, is they're reloading so much on that offense, you know, without Watson, without Mike Williams, without Wayne Gallman, without those, Clemson's going to be very strong on both lines this year. But man, I expect, if I had to put kind of like a prediction down today, I'd expect another lower scoring than expected, just kind of slugfest like last year was. And I think the difference this year is Auburn's has the opportunity to have the advantage in the quarterback battle, and you know that usually helps you win close games like that. So it's going to be a fun one. It being at Clemson will make it very, very interesting. But you know, I expect another really close, really good game this year that's going to set the tone for what Auburn can bring this year.
All right, Steve, Big Ten, we're talking Big Ten today in terms of our over under numbers, and let's start with Ohio State. And, you know, obviously you look to the schedule, and that Oklahoma game sits there looming on September 9th. The back number for Ohio State is 10.5 on their win total, which means they would only be able to lose one game, or it goes to an under. You know, problematic maybe at Nebraska. Penn State comes in, but that's a revenge game for them, and they're at the Big House at the end of the year. It feels like a three-game schedule for Ohio State: Oklahoma, Nebraska, Penn State, and Michigan, a four-game, you know, kind of about a four-game deal, unless they get tripped up at Iowa or something like that. What do you think about Ohio State at 10.5 in the regular season?
Yeah, they have, of course, 12 regular season games. So, yeah, 10-2 you lose, 11-1 or better, you're going to win that play. Yeah, boy, there's not a lot of value going over 10.5, but I still think that's probably the way to play it. Just because of the schedule, as you mentioned, Michigan's going to be down a notch this year. You know, Michigan outplayed them at Ohio State last year, you know, so you would figure on the road at Michigan, they'd be have a tough time with it. But Michigan's going to be really young this year. Ohio State returns 15 starters. Michigan only has four back on offense and only one defensive starter back. So Ohio State could very well be favored in that game at the end of the season. I think the only dark, or the other team that could get them is Penn State. In fact, Ohio State's one of the top three favorites to win the national title, but I think Penn State might win this division even. They've also got 15 starters back. They, of course, beat Ohio State last year. Now, the game is at Ohio State this year, and it's a huge revenge game. So, you know, the two tough games on the schedule both set up pretty well for Ohio State, and I think they probably get 11 wins.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Michigan then. They're at 8.5, which I did think was a touch low, even though, you know, they are young, like you say. But a lot of it maybe comes off of this first game. I mean, they're what, a 3.5-point favorite? I'm looking at the numbers right now. About a 3.5-point favorite over Florida in Jerry's world, and I, you know, man, Jim McElwain, he's freaky. You know, I don't know who the quarterback's going to be. I guess it's going to be Malik Zaire. I didn't see that coming. I didn't understand it. But, you know, I don't think Michigan is going to go down to Dallas and just, you know, rack up 38 points against a Florida defense, even though they're making a lot of changes there. That might be the swing game, though, for them. They drop that game, it's going to be awfully hard for them to go over 8.5. But what do you think about Michigan at 8.5?
I think that's definitely the swing game, because if you really look at their schedule, we know they're a favorite, as you said, against Florida now on a neutral field on September 2nd. You know, as I look at the schedule, they'll probably only be an underdog in maybe three games all season. So that would mean they go 9-3. So I think just by default, you lean towards the over. And, you know, yes, they only return one defensive starter, as I mentioned, but the question becomes, has Harbaugh already gotten them to that point in his third year where they don't rebuild, they reload? You know, teams like Alabama return four defensive starters all the time. They're still great. I just don't know if Michigan's at that point yet in just Harbaugh's third year, but they had a lot of talent even before he got there. So I think, if anything, they might be a little underrated this season. They are at Penn State. They'll be a dog. There maybe will be a dog at home against Ohio State. That's the season finale. They're at Wisconsin. They'll be a dog. So those are the three games, I think. One tough game, though, is October 14th at Indiana. Indiana could be a bit of a sleeper this year in the Big Ten, and I don't think they'll be an underdog in that game, but that would not shock me to see the Hoosiers win that as they return 15 starters.
The Penn State one is fascinating. I mean, that's a game where I'm usually very focused on the SEC, and I quickly check my SEC schedule to see if that's Alabama, Tennessee. So I'll be in Tuscaloosa for that one. But that game against Penn State at Penn State is fascinating because, you know, we talked about the revenge factor for Ohio State and Penn State when that game is going to be at Ohio State. Same thing. Penn State got trucked when they were at Michigan last year. So you wonder whether or not Penn State has something for Michigan when they get there. That's going to be a fascinating one.
Yeah, not only that, but Penn State has the bye week before the Michigan game. So they have a week to get ready for a huge revenge spot. I think that really sets up well, actually, for Ohio State for that reason. So even though I kind of my dark horse pick, I'm taking Penn State to win this division. I think they're definitely up against it because they're going to be coming off the Michigan game and having to play on the road at Ohio State to try to get that win against a Buckeye team with revenge. So it looks like things set up pretty good for the Ohio State Buckeyes in this division. That's also why they're one of the two or three favorites to win the national title.
All right. Obviously, we have very little access during, you know, practice. Do you guys get the viewing period and things like that? But there are a few position battles that are taking place that are significant. What are the things you're most interested in seeing, you know, what happens between now and the second in terms of spots that are question marks for you?
Well, you know, once they get into pads, which they're not yet, I'm interested to see the defensive front. How they replace Jonathan Allen, Ryan Anderson, you know, so much talent in the front seven with inexperienced guys for the most part, and then how they revamp the right side of the offensive line with Jonah Williams moving over to the left side. Will it be Cotton or Pershbacher at right guard? Will it be Lashley, Womack, Leatherwood? Who will be the right tackle? So I'm interested in seeing those things. Every position has something, and every position has something intriguing, and every position has freshmen coming in who could impact. You're not allowed to say depth chart, but play in rotation. And so there's something at every position. That's why it's good to have some practice time. But I think defensive front and right side of the offensive line are what most people are looking at.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting the way they juggle the defensive backfield as well. I mean, they've got parts there that can play in different positions, including, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick, who seems to be the, you know, kind of the key to all of that. But it's going to be interesting to see how they line those guys up. On the Jalen Hurts front, there's all this talk about, you know, becoming a better passer, more accurate. We saw they struggled with accuracy and with passing yards in the playoff and in the championship game. But, you know, I don't want to say that, you know, this isn't a big time for him to have improvement. But when you look at the way this team seems to be built, it seems to be so much talent in the backfield that, you know, I don't think they're going to throw the ball 50 times a game, right? I mean, he needs to be accurate in those 19 to 22 times they throw it, but I don't think they're going to be throwing it as nearly as much as we saw with Lane Kiffin, and especially with the number of quality backs they have, right? I mean, we're going to see a little bit of a big boy football again out of Alabama here?
I would think they'd like to do that. That's the surest way to win, and I think that's the way that Nick Saban's the most comfortable with running the offense. But you have to be able to do both, and the rules of football as they are today dictate that you do have to throw some. You can't just line up there with two tights and a fullback and slam it straight ahead on every down. You won't score enough to win. You know, the rules enable the other team to be able to score, but you do want to be in a position in the third and fourth quarter if you have a lead. Put a game away in that way. They have a group of players who can do it. They did it without a group. They did it with just Derrick Henry 2 years ago. You know, you just handed it to Derrick as if he were three guys. And so they would like to do that again. They have the luxury of having a lot of skilled guys back there to run the ball. Again, they're trying to rebuild a right side of an offensive line. You can't do it without a good offensive line. Jalen's skill set enhances that because you have to worry about him just keeping that thing or, as you say, throwing it occasionally. So they'd love to do it, but the time's coming where the rules just make you have to score enough points that you have to throw the ball.
All right, there you have it. That is your Rapid Rewind for this, the 4th of August, 2017. We'll come back and wrap it up right after this. A final update with T-Mac on 730-1039.
Hey, it's our dime. Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867. Here's Tom Abraham.
Right, welcome back. Let's get a final look at the news of the day with T-Mac. It's a Doghouse Sports Report.
The Atlanta Braves fell to the Dodgers last night, 7-4, but not all was bad news. Right fielder Nick Markakis becomes the 10th active player to record his 2,000th hit. It came in the bottom of the fourth inning on a single to left field off of L.A. pitcher Alex Wood. And Ozzie Albies got his first major league hit in the form of a three-run blast in the bottom of the ninth inning. The 20-year-old second baseman becomes the first player born in 1997 to have a major league home run. Alabama lands commitment from four-star Cameron Latu. The defensive end is from Salt Lake City, Utah, and is the Tide's second commitment in as many days. Other college football news includes Mississippi State's freshman running back Kylan Hill being arrested for reckless driving, the Starkville Daily News reports. According to head coach Dan Mullen, Hill will likely pay a fine and will not miss any playing time. The Dallas Cowboys beat the Arizona Cardinals 20-18 in the lock of the day and lock of the year in the preseason opener last night in Canton, Ohio. The Cowboys held off a last-minute drive by the Cardinals after coming back from a two-touchdown deficit. And other NFL news includes Steelers and head coach Mike Tomlin agreeing to an extension through 2020 and Cowboys owner Jerry Jones stating that he does not anticipate the suspension for Ezekiel Elliott. And finally, some afternoon baseball. The Nats beat the Cubs at Wrigley Field 4-2, and the Cardinals and Reds are knotted at zero in the first inning. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
And for the purpose of correction, I blurted out that, you know, Bear Bryant never lost to Tennessee. For all intents and purposes, he had a pretty solid record against Tennessee, and he had that 10-11 game winning streak from 1971 to 1981. But that game we talked about in 1966, Alabama won 11-10 in Knoxville, and Tennessee actually won the next four of those games in Birmingham, 24-13, then back in Knoxville in 68 by a score of 10-9. Tennessee wins 41-14 in 69, and then 24-0 in 1970. And that's at the point where Bear Bryant seriously considers leaving Alabama and, in fact, had accepted the job as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins and then slept on it and the next day decided he wanted to stay at Alabama. So they gave that job to a young coach by the name of Don Shula. And Bear went on to beat Tennessee the next 11 years. So there's some history there. They did lose, you know, five or six times against Tennessee. All right, that's going to do it for us. Make sure you have yourself a wonderful weekend. Tony Mack mixed the show. Cream did a lot of research today. It's a good job by the crew. I'm Tom Abraham. Till next time, have yourself a wonderful weekend here on 730-1039.
Sports Radio 730 and 1039. The OP. WUMP.